Let's open to John chapter 9. John chapter 9, beginning in verse number 1. And as Jesus passed by, he saw a man which was blind from his birth. And his disciples asked him, saying, Master, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Jesus answered, Neither hath this man sinned, nor his parents, but that the works of God should be made manifest in him. I must work the works of him that sent me, while it is day. The night cometh, when no man can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. When he had thus spoken, he spat on the ground, and made clay of the spittle, and he anointed the eyes of the blind man with the clay, and said unto him, Go wash in the pool of Siloam, which is by interpretation, sent. He went his way therefore, and washed, and came seeing. Now, as we have previously taught in this chapter, Jesus is passing by here, and notice that this man does not cry out and ask that his eyes might be opened. There's no request here. This is an act of pure grace and an act designed to teach. This man was born blind. Well, there's a great truth here that's brought out in this chapter, that it wasn't just this man that was born blind, but that the entire human race is born blind. That's why Jesus points out one more time as we come into chapter 9 that he's the light of the world. In verse number 5, a light shining in a dark place. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. And as we looked at a previous lesson, it is earlier said in the book of John that the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. Now, we have mentioned in the Sunday morning service that the reformed sort of people, the amillennialists or the postmillennialists, they deny the literal second coming of the Lord Jesus, but another of their pernicious doctrines is that God, by totally capricious means, before the world began, elected some to be saved and simply allowed the rest to go their way, totally without looking at what that person might be willing to do. Well, we see here there's an act of pure grace, which is why I pointed out the fact that Jesus passes by here, and there's no act of faith on the part of this blind man saying, Lord, if you would heal me, I know that you could. That doesn't happen. But do you think that Jesus knows what the outcome of this is going to be? Of course he does. This is not blind caprice. Look what Jesus says in verse number 3. Neither hath this man sinned, nor his parents, but that the works of God should be made manifest in him. Well, what work is Jesus talking about here? The opening of the eyes of the blind. Now, we're using a physical representation here of a spiritual thing. This man's eyes are going to be opened physically, it's true, but the real teaching here is that his spiritual eyes are going to be opened, because as soon as Jesus tells him, I am the Messiah, he immediately believes and worships him. Well, if God had totally by caprice decided that this man should be saved and others should be allowed to go their own way, well, then, if he doesn't know, how did he pick this individual? You see, the covenant Calvinists can't have it both ways. They will stridently deny that there's foreknowledge of God is the basis of election. No. God just shows his favor on some and lets the rest become reprobate by blind caprice. Well, that isn't what happens here. Do you think that Jesus also sees? Isn't that very word used in verse number 1? And Jesus passed by and saw a man which was blind from his birth. Do you think he just physically, with his physical eyes, saw a man that was blind from his birth? And is it that John has just recorded here that he saw a man that was blind from his birth because it just suddenly occurred to him as he was passing by, oh, look, there's somebody that can't see? Or do you suppose that he knew it long before he encountered this man? Of course. Absolutely. I think we can see that by reason of the miracle that's performed, that the works of God should be made manifest in him. So, back again to the question. What work? Verse number 4, I must work the works of him that sent me while it is day. For the night cometh when no man can work. What works are spoken of here? Mm-hmm. What? Yes, there is Father's works, but the question is, what are the works? And the works are to open the eyes of the blind. By the way, did God owe it to this man to come by and see his helpless estate and then work this miracle, a two-edged miracle? The opening of his physical eyes and the opening of his spiritual eyes. Was God under any restraint to do this? Or constraint, I should say?
No.
No. It's an act of pure grace. Would God have been totally righteous to have turned the entire human race over to reprobation? It certainly was. What does Romans 5:12 tell us? We've been over that enough times that I'm sure somebody has it memorized. Yes, and death by sin. So let's consider that. Yes. Let's consider this one man just for a moment. Obviously, it's Adam. What is said about Adam in his act of disobedience? What do we know about that act of disobedience?
He knew that what he was doing was wrong.
Yes, he absolutely knew it. He was not deceived. We're told that. Adam was not deceived. He knew what it was that he did. Did he do it of his own volition? Now, some people would say that Adam had free will. Did he really? He was able to exercise his will within a certain narrow constraint. He couldn't decide that he wanted to fly. That would be free will. I will that I can fly. No, he acted, but he acted on his own volition. There was a range of choice there. But of his own volition, he decided that he would disobey God. I think that's pretty clear. Do you think the human responsibility entered into the equation?
Of his action?
Of
what he did?
Yes. Of course it did. Because if there was no human responsibility, could God have charged him with the sin? Did he try to assume guiltlessness by blame shifting? Of course he did. Did God buy it? It's really not my fault. The woman that thou gavest me. It's really your fault, God. How did that play? No, Adam, you did what you did of your own volition, and now you must own up to it. Did he own up to it? Good question. But did he?
I think eventually he probably did.
How eventually?
Eventually enough that we shall see him in the future and not now.
If you gave that answer on an essay question, how many percent did you just get?
I got it all.
No, you begged the question. What was his last act in the Garden of Eden?
No, they had to take the skins and cover themselves.
They had to?
They chose to.
They chose to. Was that an act of personal volition?
Mm-hmm.
Of course it was. Did God know that Adam would do these things? By the way, when Adam donned the coats of skins, the animal's blood having been shed, did God look with favor upon him then?
Yes.
Yes, he certainly did. Without the shedding of blood, there's no remission of sin. How did Cain react to that? No, look at, I got blood from a turnip. No, he didn't. But what was his idea about God's way of salvation?
He decided he needed to start the first
religion. Was that an act of human volition? It certainly was. Okay. Let's fast forward to John chapter 9 then, and we see Jesus passing by here. There's no reaction from this man that was born blind, but there's an encounter that's about to take place. Eerily reminiscent of the Garden of Eden, don't you think?
Exactly what I was thinking.
Adam, where art thou?
I was thinking about how we made the clay.
Yeah. Yes, have you heard of double blind studies? Well, we'll get to that. Now, his disciples immediately ask a question here. And it has, once again, to do with human volition. Verse number 2, his disciples asked him, saying, Master, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Now, we've already discussed how that this question arises out of complete spiritual ignorance. But once again, what is brought forth here? What's the thought behind this? What are they really saying? You know, if you just listen to people, they'll tell you what they're thinking, even when they don't know what they're thinking.
What is the reason that he was born blind?
Yes, that was the question that was asked. Looking at verse number 2 once again, let's read it. And his disciples, his learners, those that were learning of him. Well, they haven't learned much. But they ask him, saying, Master, who did sin? Who did sin that this man, or his parents, that he was born blind. Yeah, you're striking a trail here. There's a reason that I tried to draw parallels between what happened in the Garden of Eden and what's going on here. Because if you learn how to spot this, it'll help you in your job as an ambassador of Christ, because you're going to run into blind people too. Lots and lots of them. A whole human race full. What is his disciples just tell you about themselves? No, I don't think that they said that they were sinners.
Well, human beings are.
Did they say that?
Well, did he or his parents? They knew
something. Yes. Isn't it interesting how they have a very narrow focus here? They say, who did sin? That could be the entire human race, but then immediately they narrow the focus. Was it his parents? Are they the guilty parties? Or was it this man? Is it something that he himself did?
He didn't think it through very well because, he was born blind. How in the world was he going to sin?
Actually,
as a baby.
Yes, they may have spoke something here that they didn't understand themselves.
Well,
whose fault was this? This man? Or was it his parents?
Well, they didn't understand. That's why they were asking the question.
What are they saying, though, about themselves? It's almost like they've detached themselves from the scene. They're looking at this from the outside. And as they gaze into this scene, they see Jesus and this blind man and his parents and a whole bunch of other people standing around. But what are they really saying about themselves? We're detached from this?
Well,
we're not even involved in this scene?
They're basically saying that if there is some sort of illness that is caused because of sin in somebody's life, healthy, so we're not sinners.
Yeah, exactly. Isn't that really what they're betraying? Something is wrong in this person's life, and so therefore, it's sin in a narrow sense. It hasn't infected the whole human race. It's just this blind guy. He must have done something. Or it must be his parents. They must have done something, and the rest of us are guiltless. So isn't that the first thing that we see here? They're taking a detached view of this rather than placing themselves in the scene. But they betray something else in this question too, which brings us back to this man. Are they saying something here that's true, but they don't even realize it? There you go. There's the connection.
The who here would be Adam.
It's almost like they've removed themselves from the human race, and they're looking in on this scene in a totally detached manner. But they're not detached, are they?
Is it because they're Jewish and they think they're God's chosen people and this man isn't Jewish?
No, this man is obviously Jewish because his parents are afraid of being thrown out of the synagogue if they recognize Jesus for who he is. That's why they do this little two-step. Well, he's of age, let him speak for himself. No, they're Jewish, all right. What's the great thing that Paul brings out in Romans 1, 2, and 3 concerning the human race? And it has bearing on what we're looking at here. Remember I said, yes, he is Jewish. All have sinned and come short of the glory of God. Whether they've sinned under the law or they've sinned without the law, Nevertheless, death reigned from Adam to Moses. You know that? So, what have they actually said when they said, who did sin, this man? They brought something up, but they don't understand it.
They didn't realize that we're all sinners.
If they thought they were Jews and they weren't sinners like the Gentiles, what race did they think they came from? There was no such thing as a Hebrew before Abraham, was there? Do you think they might have a little bit of a narrow view here? And yet they've struck on something that brings us right back to the Garden of Eden. Who did sin? This man. Like somebody pointed out just a minute ago, he was born blind. What could he have done?
Well,
what did he do?
He could have had a sin nature that he was born with him. But then again, so did they.
Yes. And that wasn't the cause of it. Jesus said no. No, it wasn't him, and it wasn't his parents. This is to show forth the glory of God. Do you think that they understood that the entire human race was under the curse of sin, for all have sinned and come short of the glory of God, whether they be Jews or Gentiles? And then they asked about the parents. Let's get that in there too. Verse number 2 again. Master, who did sin? This man or his parents, that he was born blind. This goes right back to the Garden of Eden if you stop and think about it. What are these disciples attempting to do here? Like, maybe if this guy didn't do it, it has to be somebody's fault. Aren't they really doing the same thing here? Isn't this exactly the same thing? If this guy is innocent, it has to be the parents. The woman that thou gavest me, it's the very same thing. And this has been going on since the Garden of Eden until this very day. This is the way people think because they're blind. Yes?
What is the theological precedent in Judaism that says that somebody has a sickness, they're sinful?
That's what I was
going to
ask. Do they not believe in the devil or the action?
Yes, they did believe in the devil. As a matter of fact, in the previous chapter, who do they accuse Jesus of being?
That's right.
Yeah? They believed in a real devil who creates real problems for the human race. Jesus set a number of people free from demonic possession. Yeah, they believed it. But doesn't this come back to the Garden of Eden again? It's not my fault. Must have been those parents. Is there any hint here that they're actually saying, well, maybe it's our fault too, the disciples?
Not at all.
See how much they're admitting in this question? And yet how much truth there is in it if you stop and think about it.
No, so they don't realize
Yes. Okay, verse number 3 again. Neither hath this man sinned. Now, once again, Jesus is not saying that this man is sinless, is he? No. Nor his parents. Well, he's not saying that they're sinless either. What he is saying is, it wasn't their sin that caused this problem. So why was the problem allowed to happen? Well, that the works of God should be made manifest in him, which brings us back to this work again. What is this work? Well, after looking at verse number 2, can we see the need for this work? These are the followers of the Lord, his disciples. And they're just as blind as the blind man. The blind man is double blind. I said a moment ago that if you really wanted to make sure that a seeing man was blind, what's one of the best ways of doing it? Putting mud in his eye? Why did Jesus make clay out of the spittle and put it on his eyes? Everybody wants to know the answer to that, don't they? It should start dawning on us here pretty soon what this imagery means. Great theologians try to tell us, well, the Jews believed that human spittle had curative properties. Well, I don't know. It seemed to me then you'd probably want to thank the person that spits in your eye. Well, he formed man of the dust of the ground, and he does use the spittle to make clay. Yeah, you could draw that. A lot of great theologians say, well, the Jews thought that using spittle and making it into mud and putting it on your eyes had curative powers, and that's what Jesus was doing. What's wrong with that sort of foolishness?
Well, you could try it 100 billion times, and it's not going to work.
As a matter of fact, if you want to stop a seeing man from seeing, what's one of the most effective ways of doing it? Plastering mud in his eye? Well, I think Jesus is pointing something out here, and it's not the fact that spittle has curative properties. We'll come back to that later. Verse number 4, I must work the works of him that sent me while it is day, for the night cometh when no man can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. Now, why would he say this in connection with everything that's transpired in John chapter 8 and now what has transpired prior to this point in John chapter 9? As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. Why would the world need light? Because it was dark. Can human beings see in the dark? When the lights go out, are human beings blind? No, human beings were blind before the lights went out. So what does Jesus mean here? As long as I'm in the world, I am the light of the world. Why would the world need light? Because the world is blind? Isn't that what he's saying? Did he say this at midnight? No. The sun's up. It's daytime when these things are taking place. So why would you need a light when it's daytime? Because there's a kind of a blindness here that we're talking about, which is not the same kind of blindness that this man has been afflicted with since birth. There's a greater object in this teaching. Much greater object. Pardon? Yes, they're spiritually blind. All human beings are born spiritually blind. Now, with that thought in mind, let's turn to Ephesians chapter 4 and verse number 17. This is the grand teaching here in John chapter 9. The need of it was certainly brought out in John chapter 8, wasn't it? Say we not well that thou art a Samaritan and hast a devil? Does it sound like they wanted to come to the light? No, they didn't want to. So did they see the light? No, they didn't. And remember when we took the sneak preview at the end of John chapter 9? Some of those same Pharisees asked Jesus another question. Ephesians chapter 4 then, in verse number 17. This I say therefore, and testify in the Lord, that ye henceforth walk not as other Gentiles walk, in the vanity of their mind, having the understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God, through the ignorance that is in them, because of the blindness of their heart. Well, why are they ignorant? Why are they ignorant of God? Because of the blindness of their hearts. Well, that being the case, verse number 18 ends with a colon, which does what? Connects two sentences together. Verse number 19, who being past feeling have given themselves over to work unto lasciviousness, to work all uncleanness with greediness. What's being said here? Why do these other Gentiles, and by the way, could the Jews have been included here too? Yes, we went over this last time we got together, but it's good to refresh ourselves once again, because something very important is taking place in John chapter 9. Were the Jews blind? Well, even the Jewish disciples of the Lord Jesus were blind. We've already seen that. Why were they blind? That question would come up because the disciples asked the question, who did sin? Was it him or was it his parents that he was born blind? And somebody asked the question, were these Jews? Yeah, we pointed out they are Jews, but these aren't Jews here that Paul's writing to. These are Gentiles. Do they have a similar problem? They certainly do, for all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. And I don't know if I pointed this out last time or not, but even we that are born again still have a blind spot. Beware the blind spot. What's one of the first things they teach you in driver's ed class, if you had driver's ed, about those rear view mirrors? There's a blind spot. Turn your head around and look, because you've got a blind spot if you're using those mirrors. Well, even we as believers have a blind spot too. And here it is. Verse 22, that you put off concerning the former conversation or the former manner of life, the old man, that blind one, which is corrupt according to the deceitful lusts, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind. What is verse number 23 sometimes called, using one word? And it means setting apart. Sanctification. Right there, verse 23. And be renewed in the spirit of your mind, and that you put on the new man, which after God is created in holiness, in righteousness and true holiness. The entire human race is blind, and even we who are born again still have a blind spot. Now, we could spend a lot of time going and looking at some of these blind spots. Did Paul have a blind spot? Yeah, he sure did. Does everybody in the scripture have a blind spot? Sure. Well, that's true. That's true. The entire human race is wholly blind, but even we who are born again still have a blind spot. Maybe that's why some of the leading theologians think that Jesus mix spittle and clay because it had a curative property. Would that show forth the works of God? How stupid is that? That means that the quack doctors they had in those days, or even the quack doctors that we have in these days, are showing forth the glory of God? No. Let's pray.